Good morning. Today's daf and gittin is Lamed Aleph. Today's the last day of the third parak of the Masechta. We're a little bit behind. We're back on daf Lamed, Amud Aleph. We're going to be starting from where we left off yesterday. Our goal today is we're going to finish the parak. I'm going to go quickly. I'm going to be running through a lot of Gemara, obviously. I'm going to do our best in terms of explanation of the Gemara and provide hopefully what is the clearest explanation, but I'm also going to state from the outset that our goal is really to finish the parak today, so that's what we're looking to do. We have gone into the discussion here in the third parak of Gittin about Cheskes Chai, that you can assume that the person's still alive. There's a presumption that one is allowed to make, that a person, last we left him off, he's alive, he's going to continue to be alive. Now, that chazakah is mitigated by the fact that when the person's going to die, we're all going to die. And so chazakas are good, but you have to also take other issues into consideration, knowing that the person's going to die. So maybe the chazakah is that the person's not going to be alive. So the chiddush that we've been learning now for a number of days is that no, we have a cheskes chai. The person is presumed to be left alive. And that's incredibly significant because let's go with the gittin example because that's obviously why we're here. We're having this discussion. So when a person sends a get and the get takes months in order for it to travel to its designation in order to get to his wife so she can accept the get in order for her to be divorced. So that could be 5-6 months later. And now as she's receiving the get, the get's only going to be valid if he's currently alive. But the last we heard of him was 5 months ago, 6 months ago. How do we know that he's currently alive? So that's the answer is Cheskes Chai, that we operate with this presumption, that he's alive. We have gone now over the limits of at what point in time do we say Cheskes Chai? The last time we left him, he was in critical condition. Do we then say Cheskes Chai? The answer is no. If, let's say, he's a Zakein, he's exceptionally old, do we still say Cheskes Chai? The answer is unclear. Right? Go back to the Gemara that we did a number of days ago. Okay, so that's what we have been discussing. In that discussion, we took a small break a couple of days ago on Chav Ches, and we got into the discussion regarding Shliach Osa Shliach. One Shliach going ahead and deputizing another Shliach, subcontracting of Shlichus. But that was a short digression of the Gemara over here. But then yesterday's Daf and Daf Lama, we returned back to the issue of Cheskes Chai, but no longer in the application of get, but now in a totally different application altogether. And that is the case of lending money. Okay, so and we're talking about a specific type of loan, which we were introduced to yesterday in the Mishnah on Lamed Amud Aleph. Let me reset this kind of loan structure that we're talking about over here. So when lending money, so we all know, when you lend money, so you are the malva, you're the lender. The person borrowing the money is the love, and obviously you're going to make a note, that is proof for the loan. You'll lend them the money, you'll hold the note, he'll pay you back. So far, so good. That was easy. We all know that. What we're describing over here is a different type of constructed loan. This loan construction is going to be where you go ahead and you lend to a Kohen, you lend to a Levi, and basically, he says, where am I going to pay you back? I'm not going to pay you back, but rather you have a resource in which you can collect from. Otherwise known as the Truma and the Meiser, which you are going to be mafresh, which you are going to end up giving to me anyway. So you know what? Rather than paying me back, you're just simply going to collect from that fund, and that will be good, and that will be sufficient. This could work for a Kohen, this could work for a Levi, this could work for a Nani. Anyone who's got funds of money, right? Sources of money in which it's going to come to them. So what they could do is they could borrow against those revenues. Okay, it's nice and simple. Okay, so nowadays lenders lend based on future salaries. Okay, I'm not talking about the moral ramifications of it, nor am I talking about the halachic ramifications of it. It's just simply done. So people borrow against salaries. So over here, so the Kohen, the Levi, the Ani say, look, we have revenue streams. And we're going to go borrow against those revenue streams, and you collect from those revenue streams. So far, so good. So that's what the Mishnah described. And the only point that the only reason why the Mishnah is here in Gittin, because when you think about it, it's a funny place for us to be learning this particular topic. This is not a get issue. The connective tissue between the yesterday's sugya and the previous sugya is that even though you're collecting from the revenue stream a month later, 2 months later, whatever date later, you can assume that the Kohen is still alive, because if the Kohen's not alive, so then you are that is not money that was due to him. He's no longer alive. And on top of that, what happens to the dead after he dies? Well, we're going to talk more about that later this morning in terms of what's going to happen to the dead after he dies. But short of that, in other words, the point of the Mishnah is that you can go ahead and take from those revenue streams. If it's a Kohen, we're talking about Truma. If it's a Levi, we're talking about Meiser. If it's an Ani, we're talking about Meiser Ani. So the so you could take from those revenue streams, even though you don't know, is the borrower still alive, not alive? Cheskas Chai. That's what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. Okay, so far so good?
If the lender has to designate something as Truma, and then take it back. Right? How could he use it's Truma already? It's got labeled Truma. How could he use it?
Good. So Ben's question is straight on, is dead on. In other words, you're not allowed to eat the Truma. You're not a Kohen. So what you're going to do is you're going to sell it.
Oh, I see.
So in other words, so for you,
you
it's that.
Prorated, because the value is going to be a lot less than it was.
Perfect. 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 Absolutely correct. Okay.
And it's a right of offset.
Okay, he speaks accountant talk, by the way, and that's a lot of years of experience of accounting. Okay. I speak not like an accountant. Okay. All right. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, so we're going to pick up where we left off yesterday. We are on Lamed Amud Aleph. That was a lot of prep work to get to today's daf, but we needed it because that's really what we're going to primarily be discussing over the course of today. Where can you find us? On Lamed Amud Aleph and after the Gemara. Yesterday, we just dealt with the simple question of how in the world could you, the lender, go ahead and take the Truma? The Kohen didn't make a kinyan on that Truma. And you're now going to be taking that Truma to satisfaction of your debt, but the Kohen never actually took hold of it. So how does the kinyan work? So go back to yesterday. We answered that question yesterday. Not only did we answer that question yesterday, three different Amoraim all addressed this question, each one of them providing different answers. And the Gemara went through why each one of them did not like the other two Amoraim's answers. That's yesterday's daf. We're continuing. Tana Rabbanan. Good. So over here, the Braisa, just like our Mishnah. In other words, what are we doing over here? So we're having either a Kohen or a Levi or Yisrael, and they're borrowing against their revenue streams. And what you now can do, the lender, is that you could basically siphon off from the revenue streams. In other words, you are producing Truma and Meiser and Meiser Ani every single year. So you now just simply take off. You're skimming off. I say skimming off, by the way, with no negative connotation.
You're right.
You have every right to do so. And you are now just simply siphoning off these revenue streams in order to get satisfied the debt that you are owed. So far, so good. Now, there are lots of details over here. And again, we could spend so much time on these details, and I'm not going to. Because it's a Daf Yomi. We are over here just, we're just scratching the surface, and on top of that, over here we're already behind. So I know there are how many details are we going to be going over? Five different details that we're going over in terms of this particular loan construction and how this loan behaves. And so I'm just going to be scratching the surface. Forgive me, please, for not going into any type of detail. Now, number one, Posek Imam Kishar Hazal. So as far as now the sale price is concerned. So in other words, we're talking now about getting satisfied with your loan. Your loan is a dollar amount, and you're getting satisfied with the value of the produce. So value of produce, produce fluctuates. The price of it fluctuates all the time. So there's a range in terms of what the prices are, right? The thing that makes me crazy when purchasing airline tickets. So all these sites tell you, you know, the high point and the low point in terms of, you know, where the price fluctuates and where you are holding in terms of how much you paid for the ticket. Correct. So over here, we are right now appraising the produce based on so that it could satisfy the money that you're owed. So now, which prices are we going to be going with? So Kishar Hazal. So over here, you're going to be going with the lower end of the price of those produce. That's number one. Number two, Ein Bo Mishum Ribis. Also on top of that, there is not going to be a violation of the laws of Ribis. Generally speaking, when you are paying back a debt and you're not paying with money, but you're paying with commodity. So the concern always is going to be that the commodity, the value of the commodity is going to exceed the loan value, which otherwise known is ribis, is interest. And over here, there is no concern about ribis. Again, why is that the case? I'm going to move on, but it's a fair question. And ein shvis mishamta so. Also, let's say this loan extends beyond the Shemitah year, meaning a Shemitah passes over this loan. Generally speaking, we know what Shemitah does is it cancels all loans. It won't cancel this loan. The Gemara is going to explain why that is. That was point number three. Point number four. Im balachzor, eino chozer. So the, if let's say, for example, you want to retract, you can't retract. The Gemara is going to explain what that means momentarily. And finally, number five, nisyashu abalim, in mafish alem lefisha in mafishim ala oven. Let's say there was yesh, right? In other words, this year's produce never came to fruition. Okay, and my wording choice over here, not bad. So so what happened was is that you were expecting your satisfaction of loan to be coming from this year's yield, this year's produce, and the field just simply didn't produce. It happens. So now what happens? Yesh occurs, and that means to say that the loan is going to be forgiven based on yesh. Again, we're going to explain this better in just a moment. So those are five particular points that we just made regarding this kind of loan that's created. So Amar Amar Posek Imam Kishar Azol Pshita Kamashulan Afa Pishalo Pasek Kimisha Pasek Dami. Okay, so point number one of the Gemara is that when appraising the value of the produce so that it will satisfy the loan, so we're going to go with the lower price. So the Gemara says that seems to be obvious. So the Gemara says even if we didn't assess the value of the produce in the lower market, it's ke'ilu like we did. That's point number one. Number two. Ein ba misham ribis maitaima kevin dechilesley lo yaivle ki islay ein ba misham ribis. Nami ein ba misham ribis. Now, as far as why is there no violation of interest is concerned, so the Gemara gives the explanation that, look, if let's say, for example, meaning you are expecting payment to be coming from produce, the produce that you yourself are growing, meaning that's how this loan is constructed. And so now what happens if you are, what happens if, let's say, you get paid back a little bit more than what you lend? So that is called ribis. That's a violation of ribis. But the reason why over here you're not violating the Isser ribis is because what if your field doesn't produce at all? So you're getting back nothing. So in other words, the violation of ribis is when, regardless of what happens, you are going to get paid back more than the loan amount. That is usury. Usury, I'm using the word over here just simply to describe the Torah's prohibition of ribis. However, if you are assuming a certain amount of risk, so then that is not a violation of ribis. Again, this point could be discussed in much greater detail, but right now, we'll leave it at that. Number three, Ein Shvias Meshamta So Delo Karina Be Lo Yigos. Okay. Why isn't Shemitah going to cancel such a loan? Because this is not a loan that you can go ahead and you can press. Okay, the only kind of loan that Shemitah cancels is loans that are pressable. Okay, it's not the greatest adjective to describe the loan, but it's the Torah's word of lo yigos, meaning that you're in a position where you can knock on the person's door and say, new pay me. Such a loan is going to be canceled in the Shemitah year. However, this loan does not behave like that. Again, what are we looking at over here? So the money's lent, but where are you getting paid from? Not from the borrower, you're getting paid from a revenue stream that you're creating. So in other words, so you're never going to be able to go to the borrower and say, hey, pay me, because that's not where the money's coming from. It's coming from your revenue stream. So therefore, since it's not a lo yigos type loan, so therefore Shemitah does not cancel it. Next. By the way, this idea of loans not canceling the Shemitah loans, let me speak English. This idea that Shemitah does not cancel non-Loyigos loans, also in the beginning of Makos, right? Daf Gimel, Daf Dalet, right around there. Same idea over here, just another application, but same idea. In Balachzer and Echozer, the Gemara over here talks about what if we want to what if we want to retract? So the Brisa says you cannot retract. Amara Papalo Shanuela Balabais. So in terms of the inability to retract from such a deal, that is only the Balabais. Aval, right? I'm sorry. Balabais Bekoin. Aval Koin Be Balabais and Balachzor Choser Dinan The Kohen could retract for whatever reason. Let's say for whatever reason, the Kohen wants his truma, but right now he owes the Baal HaBayis money. And again, the deal was is that the Baal HaBayis is going to collect from the truma as satisfaction of the loan. So what the Kohen can do, even after the deal was done, the agreement was made, is that the Kohen can go over to the Baal HaBayis and simply say to him, "Look, I owe you the money. I know we agreed that your payment is going to be coming from the revenue stream. What I'm going to do is I'm going to simply give you money now, satisfaction of the loan, and I would like my truma." And the Kohen has an option of doing so. The Baal HaBayis cannot opt out of the agreement, but the Kohen can. Okay, good. And the Yashua Baal HaMen Mafish Lam Lefishe Mafish Lam Alavad. So Pshita. Now, let's say the following. Again, your satisfaction is coming from your produce, your yield. And let's say this year, just terrible year, nothing grew, no revenue. So now you can't go to the Kohen and say, "Hey, you owe me the money," because that wasn't the agreement. The agreement of this loan was, is that your payment is coming from this year's growth. This year's growth didn't happen. So that now arrives to the point of Yeush. You've given up hope on the payback of the loan. I'm wondering, this is a part that I don't...
Declared? Is it the Yeush?
The Gemara's assumption is of Yeush. I'm just curious to know, in other words, are we speaking, in other words, this year's yield is no good. Can't the loan just simply, can't the loan just simply extend to the following year and the year after that? Meaning, it sounds like from our Gemara that once this year's yield fails, so then that would result in Yeush of the loan. I'm not sure why it is that the loan just simply doesn't extend a second year or third year, but it's my lack of understanding, that's all. So the Gemara says that, as this seems to be an obvious point, the Gemara says it's not so obvious. De'akon. The Gemara talks about where, and here I'm not in the agriculture industry. I don't fully understand what it means, but Rashi over here describes where the stalk started growing, right? The word akon over here is a description of the stalks where they started to grow. So, ma'u detema ak nasa milsehi. I might have thought that since I'm starting to see some growth in the field, so now it's significant, which means that I wasn't miya'esh. So, kamash malan, the Gemara says no, but nevertheless, if this year's yield did not become a success, even though there was a moment of time where it seemed like it would be successful, still, failure of growth in this year's field results in yeush. Okay. Lamed Amid Aleph, we're still behind, but it doesn't matter. We're still on the bottom of Lamed Amid Aleph. And here we're continuing in our discussion of this kind of loan. Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Amav Amosus, Akom Vesalevi, Bevezdin, Umesu, Mefrish, Mafrish, Alain, Becheskas, Osor, Ashevet. Esa, Ani, Bevezdin, Umes, Mafrish, Alain, Becheskas, Ani, Yisrael. And Rebbe Achai Omer, Becheskas, Ani, Olam. Okay. Let's say, that not only do you, negotiate such a loan, but you do so in Bevezdin. So over here, making such a loan in Beis Din will allow you to do the following. It will allow you to now collect from the revenue stream, even if the borrower dies. So let's say, I'm just going to give the example of the Kohen, but it would be true by Levin and Ani as well. So the Kohen is coming to me for money. I say, no problem whatsoever. Good, you want to borrow from me? Great. And where am I collecting from? I'm collecting from the Truma revenue stream. Perfect. Great. Let's do it. And again, go back to yesterday. Remember, as I pointed out in the introduction to yesterday, when I introduced the Mishnah, the Chachamim wanted to stimulate lending. And so over here, right, this is lending made easy, because again, when you stimulate lending, it's great for the economy. So over here now, the Kohen wants to borrow from you, you're fine, no problem whatsoever. I'm going to collect from Truma, great, that's great. If we go to Basin in order to close the deal in Beis Din, what I gain by that is that I will be able to collect even if the borrower dies. In other words, because now via Beis Din, so Beis Din basically will serve now to represent the entire Shevet Kohuna, the entire Shevet Levi, and interestingly enough, all the Anim. So that now, even though the borrower himself has died, and so therefore he no longer is entitled to that revenue stream, which I was looking to go ahead and use to collect my debt. But nevertheless, now when the loan is created through Beis Din, so Beis Din now can operate on behalf of all the Kohanim and all the Levim and all the Aniim, which allows me to collect even if the borrower dies. Good. Now, on the point of the Aniyim, if you go back to the end of the Braisa, so there were two opinions. One was Aniyei Yisrael, and the other one was Aniyei Olam. Okay, that's strange. So the Gemara point picks up on that right away. We're now turning to the top of Laman Amid Beis. So Aniyei Kutim. So over here, it's just a question of whether or not when we say all the Aniyim, are we including the Aniyim who are Kutim, meaning for sure Aniyei Yisrael, who are entitled to receive all Matnas Aniyim, Kutim as well? Well, it depends. Are Kutim Geirim, is Geirim Arayos? That is a consistent machlokas throughout all of Shas. If you understood that, great. If not, come back again at a later date or go or listen earlier. Anyway, we've gone over this machlokas numerous times. And over here, it's just a question of whether or not Kusim or Geir, Emes Geir Arayos. Good. Now, Hashira Ani. Now, this is a continuation of the Braisa, right? What did the Braisa teach us? That if I make this loan through Beis Din, so I'm always going to be in a position where I can collect. Now, Heshirani ein mafish alav. Vizacha hala b'mashabiyadam. Okay. Now, let's say the following. The Ani gets wealthy. So, and now you can't go ahead and the Ani is no longer entitled to that revenue stream. And I'm assuming over here that the loan was not created through Beis Din, because once the loan's created through Beis Din, so you're always able to collect. But let's say the Ani gets wealthy. So now, what happened? Remember, Ani borrowed money from you. How is he going to pay you back? Based on future earnings. Again, the word earnings are over here, I'm using loosely. In other words, he has a revenue stream. That revenue stream of his is Matnos Aniyim. But now that you're the one who's producing that revenue stream, you're just going to take off from that Matnos Aniyim to satisfy the loan. Good. So far, so good. Now the Bryce is describing what happens when the Ani gets wealthy. So now the Ani not only got wealthy, but you're no longer entitled to collect the Matnos Aniyim on his behalf. Why? Because he's no longer entitled. He's above the poverty line. So he's no longer entitled to the Matnos Aniyim. You can't take it off. Why don't you just simply go to him and say, look, you owe me the money. That wasn't how the loan was constructed. The loan was constructed so that he never will be liable to pay his debt. So therefore, Zacha ala mashabiyada. Okay. So, V'rabbana maishna lamisa davar takanta maishna ashiros delo avitakanta. So the Gemara says, now that's a little bit strange, meaning that when it comes to the death of the Kohen or the Levi or the Ani, so what do we say? That if you create this loan in Beis Din, you're always going to be able to collect. However, in the eventuality of the Ani becoming wealthy, so there's no security created for the lender. The lender basically is going to left high and dry. Why did the Chachamim legislate and institute in the case of the Ani becoming wealthy? Well, meanwhile, for death, the Chachamim did legislate in order to protect the lender. So the Gemara gives a really interesting answer. So the Gemara says, Misa Shchicha, Ashiras Lo Shchicha. As far as death is concerned, death is, it's common. And not only is it common, by the way, it's inevitable. And so therefore the Chachamim have to take that into consideration, and that's why they protected the lender in the case of death. But in the case of somebody getting wealthy, it's not so common. Amara Papa Haino Dami Inshi. So this is going to be your takeaway line of today's daf, really it's yesterday's daf, and that is Chavr Chamis Asher. Somebody comes over to you and reports to you, that person died, so you're like, okay. In other words, there's no reason why not to accept that reporting. Okay, that you can believe such an individual. Eat Asher. But if you hear about somebody getting wealthy, right, people are talking, right? Nobody should be talking about other people, but people are talking. That person just got so wealthy. So lo ta'asher. So the Gemara says, okay, at that point in time, you're allowed to be skeptical. You're allowed to be cynical, meaning people don't just get wealthy, right? It's uncommon. Okay, good. That's a line for today. Meis tzarech litol rishos. Okay, so in the Mishnah, we learned that when you lend money to the Kohen or to the Levi or to the Ani, and he dies, so tzarech litol rishos. You have to ask for permission. When we read the Mishnah yesterday, I didn't explain it because we're going to do so right now. Tanya. Rabbi Omer Yorshim Shiyarshu. So Rabbi says, what are we talking about? Yorshim Shiyarshu. That's really clear. People who inherit. Okay, what are we talking about over here? Omiika Yorshim Delo Yarsi. The Gemara succinctly asked the question, and inheritors don't inherit? So Elam Rav Yochanan, you didn't understand what Rebbe was trying to say. We're going to explain. Yarshu Karka Velo Shiyarshu Ksafet. Okay, it means like this. It means that you are you lend money to a Kohen or to a Levi or to a Nani, right? The what we've been discussing now for two consecutive days. And what ends up happening is that the borrower dies. Again, you were able to collect money from Matnos Kahuna or the Matnos Aniyim as satisfaction of the loan. But you were only able to collect it because it was due, it was owed to the borrower, and now you're just able to collect. Fine. What happens when the borrower dies? Okay, so it depends. It depends on whether or not the borrower left land to the children or did not leave land to the children. This is an idea that we've covered many times throughout Shas, and we get to cover it again right now. And that is debt inherited? The answer is no. Debt is not inherited. In other words, with the borrower dying, the debt dies as well. However, if the borrower dies leaving land, that land is securing the loan. A lien is created against the loan. That land is securing the debt. And so what happens is that when the borrower dies, but there's land now that is getting transferred over from father to child, so the loan still exists in the land. And so now what you're able to do is that you're able to collect because of the land. That's what Rebbe's doing. That's what the Mishnah meant. That's what Rebbe meant. It's so funny, by the way. Neither the Mishnah nor the Rebbe were particularly clear about this point, but okay, good. That's what we have Gemara for. Gemara goes ahead and explains. That's what's meant. I'm Rebbe Yonah's son. So he nich melo machat, gova melo machat, melo kardom, gova melo kardom. Okay, now, how much money can you collect on that debt? Okay, I'm just throwing out numbers so that we all understand. Let's say the debt was for $1,000. Let's say the borrower dies. He left a land of, let's say, $500. So, are you now capped at only collecting $500 of your debt because that's how much land was left? So, according to Rabbi Yonasan, exactly. That's absolutely correct. And Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilo Nech Melo Machat, Govam Lo Kardom. All right. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, no. Basically, what happens is that regardless of how much land is left for the Yorshim, as long as there's land, again, the loan itself was for $1,000. The land itself appraised for $500. You can go ahead and you can now collect again and again against that land up to the full value of your debt. Okay. And how does this work? Okay. So this is where I'm just going to skip. Okay. In other words, right now, I'll say it succinctly. It works. You're able, the lender, can go ahead and repeatedly use that land and basically recycle that land again and again to satisfy your full loan. The Gemara in Ksuvos, Rashi here quotes it, goes and describes this in greater detail, but suffice to say right now, it works. Okay. Tana Rabban Yisrael Shama Levi Meiser Yeshecha B'yadi Ein Chorach Shishim L'Tshumas Meiser Shabo. Okay. So now, we are going to move topics. We are going to, at least up until the upcoming Mishnah, move into the world of Trumos and Maestros. Okay. Over here, let's go over the basics. Yisrael now has to take 2% of his produce, give it to the Kohen, that's called Truma Gedola. Afterwards, he's going to then take 10% of his of this year's produce, and that is Maaser Rishon that's given to the Levi. Then, after that, depending on what year it is, years 1, 2, 4, or 5, that's Maaser Sheni. Year 3 and 6, that's Maaser Ani. Okay, for today, for the remainder of today, we don't have to focus on that. We're going to go back up to the Maaser Rishon. In Maaser Rishon. So that Maaser Rishon now goes to the Levi. Now, the Levi can eat this Maaser Rishon? Not yet. What the Levi now has to do is take 10% of that which he was given, and he has to give that to the Kohen. That's what's called Trumas Meiser. The Levi is not allowed to eat any of his Meiser until he takes off Trumas Meiser. That means that the Kohen right now has two different sources of produce that's going to him. One from the farmer, from the landowner, that's Truma Gedola. That's the 2% that goes to him from the farmer. And then 10% that of the Maaser Rishon that went to the Levi. That's going to go to the Kohen as well. And so there are two different sources of Truma that's going to the Kohen.
That's a great system.
The Baruch Hashem. Right? That means good that you're
business.
Getting, right? You're,
good
net, you're getting now 3%. Right? In other words, Okay, good. So you saw Shamar Lalevi Meister Yeshu Chabiyadi Ein Choshishim L'Trumas Meister Shabbat. Okay, and Kor Meister Yeshu Chabiyadi Choshishim L'Trumas Meister Shabbat. So we're going to start off with a Braisa. Okay, we are on Lamed Amud Beis. We're halfway down on the Amud. We start with a Braisa, and there is a dialogue over here between owner of the land and the Levi. And the owner of the land says to the Levi, I got Meister Rishon, but without expressing an amount. I have your Meister Rishon. You don't have to worry about Trumas Meister. On the other hand, says the Braisa, if I tell him how much Meister I have of his, we'll just throw out the term Kor over here. It's an amount, 30 Sa'ah. Doesn't matter for our purposes. It's just that you're telling him, you're quantifying how much it is. So then the halacha is that you have to worry about the Trumas Meister Shabbat. Okay, we learned the Braisa together. We have no understanding whatsoever of what the Braisa means. All we know is that there's a dialogue over here between landowner and Levi. And there's a distinction to be made between where the landowner did not say how much Meister there was versus where the landowner said how much Meister there was. Okay. At this point in time, we don't know what the Braisa is talking about. My Kamar. Immediately, it leads the Gemara to the simple question of, could you please explain to me what in the world is going on over here in the Braisa? Amar Rabbi Achi Amar. So the Gemara is going to take a couple of stabs at what the Braisa means. This will take a couple of moments. So Abai's attempt is as follows. Yisol Shamar Levi, Meiser Yesha Chabiyadi, Vehelech Damav. Ve'en Choshishin Shema Trumas Meiser Amakom Acher. However, Kor Meiser Yesha Chabiyadi, Vehelech Damav, Choshin Shema, Asar Trumas Meiser Amakom Acher. What I want to do is I want to buy the Meiser Rishon. Okay. In other words, again, Meiser Rishon's entitlement to the Levi. The Levi now is full rights to it. It's his. It just happens to be that the owner has the right to decide which Levi it belongs to, et cetera, et cetera. But it belongs to the Levi. And remember, we're talking about Meiser. We're not talking about Truma. Who can eat Meiser? Everybody. So I go over to the Levi and say, look, 10% of the produce is due to you. I just want to buy it from you. Good. Okay. So, if I do not tell him how much it is, so go ahead and you can make the sale. If I tell him how much it is, you can't make the sale. Why? Because if I tell him exactly how much it is, now, just parenthetically, by the way, I'm sure you're thinking it. I'll give voice to the thought. If you don't know how much it is, how are you making the sale? Okay. It's a fair question. I'm thinking it as well. I'm just gonna move on, but I'm certainly thinking it. So anyway, but once the Levi knows exactly how much it is, here's what we have to be concerned about. Here's what our unscrupulous Levi is gonna do. After having made the sale of the Trumas Mice, of the Meiser Rishon, now what the Levi is gonna do is, you know, I have a lot of Meiser Rishon of my own that I've been collecting. And I can't eat it until I take 10%. You know what I'll do? What I'll do is that I'll take all my Trumas Meiser that I need to take off, but I'll take it off on that Meiser that I just sold. Or let's say he'll do it immediately before the sale. And so once he knows exactly how much was sold to him, so he can go ahead and he can take off Trumas Meiser on all that Meiser that was sold by the Baal HaBayis, which then means that the Baal HaBayis doesn't have Meiser Rishon. What he has is a lot of Trumas Meiser.
Oh, that has tals of you.
And now, Gemara is basically going to ask you a question. Atu b'rishiyah askinan, deshakli dame, and mashulu Trumas Meiser. And the Gemara says, and what are we talking about over here? The Bais is really talking about a Rasha. In other words, for the Levi to do that, you have to be a Rasha. After having sold something, rendering that which you sold into something that's inedible, like yeah, that's ridiculous. And the Braisa, meaning what's ridiculous is that the Braisa is not going to teach us a halacha that is addressing Rishayim. And Dave, if I may, by the way, I think David's asking even a more fundamental question, which is like, can you even do that? Meaning after you sold it, do you even have the right to go ahead and give it the status of Trumas Meiser? Okay. So Elamar Mishasha Breda Ravidi Hachi Kamar. But I already know that the Gemara is gonna just bail on that pshat and give now offer what is a possible second pshat. Elamar Mishasha Bray Rav Idi Achikamar Yisrael Shamar Leben Levi Maisel Avicha Biyadi Vehelech Damav Ein Choshesh and Shema Asau Avib Shumas Maisel Amakam Acher Kur Maisel Avicha Biyadi Vehelech Damav Choshesh and Shema Asau Avib Shumas Maisel Amakam Acher. Okay, so over here now, we are not worried about if the seller himself goes ahead, seller meaning in this case a Levi, actually sold it, he's not going to render a Chumas Meister. He wouldn't do that. But the Pshat in the Braisa is that this is Meister Rishon that I owed your father. Your father's no longer with us. And so now it's basically the same Pshat, but I'm not worried about currently whether the Levi is going to render a Chumas Meister. But historically, did it happen from the previous generation? So the Gemara says, V'chi nechshadu chaverim lechon shalom and amukav. So the Gemara says, okay, but still, in order for dad, Levi dad, to have done that, it would have mean that he would have had to have violated the following isser. When your mafish shumas amaisos, they have to be proximate to one another. That which you're separating from to that which you're separating to have to be next to one another in order for a frusha to be done ideally. Now, it works even if it's not proximate to one another, but that's b'dieved. We, generally speaking, assume that people are going to do the mitzvah in its most ideal fashion, which means that they have to be proximate. So, Alam Ravashi, so finally, we're going to be going over the third pshat of the Braisa, and that is, Hachikam Rabban Yisrael Shammah Levi, Kach Amali Abba, Maisa Lecha Biyadi, Oh, Maisa Lavicha Biyadi, Choshen Lechumas Maisa Shabo. Came to Lokislav and Matakan Le Balabais. Kur Maisel Chabiyadi, Kur Maisel Avi Chabiyadi, Choshen Lachumas Maisel Shabok, came to Kitakuni Takante Balabais. Okay, so, what happened over here is as follows, and that is that I owe you Maisel Rishon, but in other words, from my father. In other words, I inherited Maisel Rishon from my father, and, in other words, I need to give it to you. Did my father take off Chumas Maisel, yes or no? If we knew exactly how much it is, we have to be concerned that he took off Trumas Meiser, because again, Trumas Meiser is not an approximation. You have to know exactly how much there is. If he didn't know how much there is, so then we can assume that he didn't take off Trumas Meiser. Now, v'chi yesh lecha reshus ha-balabais l'chom Trumas Meiser. So the Gemara says, wait one second. Whose responsibility is it to take off Trumas Meiser? Okay, if you go back to where I introduced the Braisa altogether, so like about 10 minutes ago, so over there you probably heard me say that here's the sequence. Sequence is that the Baal Habayis takes off Truma, gives it directly to the Kohen. Takes off Meiser, gives it to the Levi, and then I probably said, and then the Levi's Mafish Truma's a Meiser. Now, in our interpretation of the Braisa, this is our third try at trying to give Pshat to the Braisa. In our interpretation of the Braisa, we are now suggesting that, look, Dad died, he left off Meiser, meaning Dad is not a Levi. My dad is a regular farmer. And he had Meiser Rishon that he was going to give to the Levi, and now we're entertaining the possibility that what he did is that he was Mafresh Trumas Meiser. The Gemara, and I was asking, I don't understand. That wasn't Dad's responsibility. Dad's responsibility was to give the Meiser Rishon to the Levi, and then in turn, the Levi's going to take off Meiser Rishon. Like, what kind of discussion are we having right now? That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, there is an opinion out there. I would call this right now a das yachid. In other words, this is not the majority position, but still, there's an opinion out there. In so Abba Lazar ben Gamla, he did Tanya. Abba Lazar ben Gamla, Amar Nechshav Lachem Chumas Chem. So B'shtei Chumas HaKasav Medaber. So you've heard this drasha before. This drasha has been brought up a number of times throughout Shas. So the Torah over here is describing two Chumas. So Achas Chumah Gedol, Achas Chumas Meiser. And so the double Chumah over here is a reference to Chumah Gedol and Chumas Meiser. And what do? We are comparing the two. Geshem shu chumah gedolah, he tells ba'omid of machshava, kash chumas meiser, he tells ba'omid of a machshava. So what you could do with chumah gedolah is that you can approximate. Right? 2% is not precision. You can approximate 2%. And also on top of that, you could do so b'machshava. You could do so with just simply a thought. In other words, you don't have to physically separate. In other words, a kavana to separate is sufficient. You may have to articulate that kavana, but still it doesn't have to be done actively. Same thing is true regarding Trumas Meiser. Now, it's funny, by the way, because Trumas Meiser is an amount. Trumas Meiser is 10%. And meanwhile, this drasha, not everyone agrees to it, but this drasha says that just like Truma Gedola, could be approximated. So too, Trumas Meister could be approximated. Ukishem Sheish Lavishus, Labalabais, Lachum, Truma Gedola, Kachesh Lavishus, Labalabais, Lachum, Lachum, Trumas Meister. And just like the farmer is taking off Truma Gedola, that's a non-starter, meaning everyone, of course. So too, the farmer can also take off Trumas Meister as well. Either Trumas Meister is coming off of the Meister Rishon, which is going to the Levi. Yeah, but in this drasha, which is authored by Rabbi Elazar ben Gamla, in this drasha, so Rabbi Elazar ben Gamla compares Truma Gedola to Trumas Meister. Truma Gedola can be done by the farmer. Trumas Meister can be done by the farmer as well. Okay, so that was a long walk. Just to get to, I mean, it's worth it, but just to get to ape shot in the Brisa. So in other words, the last 15 minutes of today's daf. So what we did is that Tana Rabbanu, we started with a Brisa, Laman Amad Beis, regarding a dialogue between the Yisrael and the Levi, where the Yisrael says to the Levi, I got Maisa Rishon. He doesn't say the amount. Don't worry that Truma Gedola was taken. I'm sorry. Don't worry that Truma's Maisa was taken off. On the other hand, contrast that with, I know exactly how much Maisa Rishon we're talking about. Now you have to worry that Truma's Maisa was taken off. What is happening over there in that Brisa? And we just gave not one, but three different pshatim in terms of what's going on with the Brisa. And pshatim one and two, the Gemara simply dismissed, did not like. And we just went with the third pshat in the Brisa. But the only way, just mind you, if you're really following today's daf well, the only way that the third pshat worked is only within the shita of Rav Elazar ben Gamla. Okay. That last 15 minutes was complicated, I'm going to admit. Okay. We're continuing. We're in Lamed Aleph, otherwise known as today's daf. And so, and today I'm just telling everybody, I'm going to look to finish. I mean, we're going to start the Mishnah, we're going to do the Gemara. At the end of today's daf, we're going to be talking about winds. Okay, a couple times throughout Shas, we get to talk about winds. Whenever we talk about winds, I know the directions. I know which way is north, south, east, and west. And I can generally point in each one of those directions. But when we talk about winds, you will see that I will not know what I'm talking about, but that's fine. A discussion regarding winds. But that's at the end of today's daf.
Wind as in
blowing? Huh. Coming up. But before we get to the winds and before we get to the end of the parak, however, we are going to start with a Mishnah. Aminech peros liyos mafish aleim trumas amaisos. Maos liyos mafish aleim maisos sheni. So mafish aleim becheska sheim kayamim. Okay, so let's say the following. Okay, you are going to be mafish trumas amaisos, and what do you do? So you have a reserve. Okay. You basically set yourself up with a system. Okay, a beautiful system. Okay, for every 100, I was going to say oranges. I'm such a Floridian. I'm not, but in other words, but I've been here for a long time. Okay, so mangoes. Oh my gosh. Okay,
they're everywhere.
I'm eating too many of them. Yeah. I know, I know. Okay, again, I'm a Floridian. Okay, so let's talk grapes. Okay, so for every 100 grapes that I bring in. So two of them have to go to the Kohen, that's otherwise known as Truma. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to create basically a bank. In other words, I'm going to have a pile of grapes that I'm going to be storing. And so now I'm just going to bring in, right, more and more grapes and bank it. Meaning I'm going to just keep a tab. All the Truma that I need to take is going to be in my reserve that I already put aside. And obviously, I gotta do good accounting over here to make sure that I keep correct numbers, so that for all my harvesting that I harvest, I'm gonna make sure that 2% now is gonna go to the bank. Okay, and I say bank over here, I actually mean physical grapes that I put aside as reserve to be used as truma. And then when the bank is full, I can now take all that and I give it to the Kohen. Okay, so far so good. It's a great system. And not only can you do that with grapes, but you can do that with money as well. In other words, for Maaser Sheni is redeemable, right? Truma Gedola is not redeemable. Maaser Rishon is not redeemable. Truma Meiser is not redeemable. But Maaser Sheni is redeemable. So what I'll do is the same thing. Over here, when I say bank, I actually could be talking about money and coins. And so what I'll do is that for Maaser Sheni, I'll just bring it in. And again, I will then be poda onto the money. And again, with good accounting, making sure that I know exactly how much Maaser Sheni goes in, so that I will then just simply redeem it onto the money. And when the money gets full, meaning full of the value of Maaser Sheni, the Kedusha Maaser Sheni, I take that money and go to Yerushalayim, and I spend that money in Yerushalayim. How are we doing so far? So far, so good. Okay, so what is now the Mishnah going to be describing? And that is, we lost our grapes. We lost our money. And now, obviously, we have a problem. I'm going to start again from the beginning of the Mishnah. Aminiach, I say the grapes, by the way, and the money. I'm talking about the grapes that were banked as truma. So, Aminiach, Fairs, Leos, Mafresh, Alem, Truma, Samaisros. And Maos, Leos, Mafresh, Alem, Maisros, Sheni. So, Mafresh, Alem, Becheska, Shem, Kayam. Okay, so, what you're going to do is you can assume that the grapes are still intact. You can assume the money's still intact. Now it's interesting, by the way, because grapes are perishables.
Yeah.
And money is durable. So, money you could trust a lot more in terms of its durability, obviously, over that of the grapes. Mafresh lein b'cheska shein chayamim im avdu harizeh choshesh meisleis divrei Rebbe Elazar. Now, what if I lost the grapes? What if I lost the money? So now we have a problem. So in other words, we know that the grapes and money were there. We now know that they're not here. And this is one of those most classic Gemara discussions. Once upon a time they were here, now they're not. What do we assume? In other words, at what point did I lose the grapes? From the last time I checked them? Or from the moment that I discovered that they're not here? Which chazakah is going to play out? So the Mishnah over here just simply says, you know, Shitas Rebbe Elazar. You have a 24-hour window in which everything's going to be okay.
Isn't that similar to a woman who like a needle?
Okay. Fantastic analogy. I had the same thought. Hold that thought. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shlosha Prakim, Botkin, Asayayin. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says the second part of the Mishnah that three times a year you examine the wine. I'm going to explain that better in just a moment. So, Botkin, Asayayin, and they are Bikidim Shomazei Chagva, Otsas, Madar, Vishas, Knisas, Mayim, Beboser. Okay, I'm going to take a hard pass right now. Please forgive me. I'm going to take a hard pass at describing these agricultural times. All right, I read the Rashi. I could translate the words of Rashi. Okay, I don't own a vineyard. Okay,
not yet.
Thank you. Our friend in California owns a vineyard. I know.
Damn.
And okay, and I have not visited him. And okay. I don't have to go public with my regrets, but I want to go visit. Okay, anyway. But please forgive me. There are three times a year in which there are critical times in terms of the agricultural process of the vineyard. I'll take a pass right now on explaining these three times. So, my me'islam ilay. So there really are two points in the Mishnah. So, number one, having your bank. And basically now every time you bring in grapes, so now, 2%, okay, good, right, apply to our reserves. And keep doing that until it gets filled. And then what happens is that I open up the cupboard where I kept all my truma grapes, it's gone. I lost it. I don't know where it went. Don't matter. So now, in our Mishnah, we said, Rabbi Elazar says you have a 24-hour window. So first of all, my meisleis, Rabbi Yochanan, my meisleis, shel bedika. And Rabbi Elazar ben Antiknas, my Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yanai, meisleis, shel hanacha. Okay, so it's like such a classic debate in the Gemara, and that is, you are given a 24-hour window from, well, it's not clear. In other words, there are two checkpoints. One, the last time that you know it was there. Two, currently right now when you know it's not there. So there are two markers. And Rabbi Elazar in the Mishnah said, well, for 24 hours, you'll be good. So it can either go from the last time that you knew it was there, 24 hours beyond that point in time, you're good. Anywhere from that point and on, you don't know. Suffolk.
What does it mean, you're good?
You're good meaning that when you were mafresh trumos, when you were mafresh your produce onto that,
yeah,
you could safely say you did the hafrasha. Granted, by the way, the kohen didn't receive it. But in other words, the remainder is not tevel. The remainder is going to be chulin. Now you, the owner, can now eat it. Okay. And beyond the 24 hours now, you don't know. You don't even know if you are mafresh properly. And therefore, that which you have
but
is
you
not...
You can't eat.
It's not matukan. It's now tevel. Or it's suffolk tevel. Good. The alternative is 24 hours from when you discover that it was lost. Which means now that you now know it's lost. So you're going to back up 24 hours. You have to assume for those last 24 hours it was also lost. But any time before that, it may be days, weeks, whatever. Anytime before that, you're going to be good. The Gemara over here does not spend a lot of time trying to explain these two positions.
Anything new you brought in, right?
No. In other words, the second opinion is that you now know it's not here.
Right.
And then you back up 24 hours. So for those 24 hours from that, from the point of discovery that it's gone, you also can have to assume it was not there. Any time before that, meaning, so whatever was the time that you deposited your bank and up to the 24 hours prior to discovery of loss, you can assume it was fine. It was there. Any hafrasha that you did is a good hafrasha.
Okay. Are you allowed talking about banking?
I'll tell you what. Let me first finish, and then afterwards you'll ask me,
yeah.
and I'll be here for you. Okay. So Tanan. Okay. Tanan. Im avdu arizeh choshesh meisei special laman darme meisei shel b'tika shapir laman darme meisei shel hanacha. So hai meis leis ad meis leis mi baile kasha. Linguistically, textually, the Mishnah fits in much better with the point of Bedika, not the point of Anacha. If we were going all the way back to the point of Anacha, where you set aside the reserves, so then it should say Ad Me'eslais. So textually, the Mishnah fits in a lot better to the point of Bedika. Okay, Divrei Rabbi Elazar. Now, one more comment over here on this first section of the Mishnah, and that is that. Our Mishnah of this 24-hour window is the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. You know what the Mishnah is basically screaming at us? The Mishnah is saying, that's Rabbi Elazar's opinion, that's not our opinion. Okay. So I'm a Rabbi Elazar. This part's confusing. Rabbi Elazar the Amora. So Chalukin Alav Chaver of Al Rabbi Al Azar. So in other words, you know, our Mishnah over here is expressing a Das Yachid, and the rabbis argue on Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar the Amora is explaining this to us. Okay, did not. And how do I know this? So this is a Mishnah in Mikvah. And by the way, Ben, this is where your senses were so good, because you pointed to the beginning of Nida. This Mishnah over here in Mikvahs is quoted right there at the beginning of that first Sugya Nida. Did not Mikvah Shininda Vinimsa Chaser Kol Taharu Shinasu Agabav L'mafreya Bein Brishas Yachad Bein Brishas Arabim. So Temeos. So So let's say I had a mikvah. It had 40 sub water. And then you know what's called? You know what it's called? It's evaporation. We're all familiar. And what's going to happen is it happens in our pools. And that is that you go a week, 2 weeks without rain. So what happens is that, of course, the water depletes. You have that water evaporating. So in the mikvah, so the water was above 40 sub. And now we know that that was true. We checked it. We measured it. So 2 months ago, it was above 40 saw, but now we just measured it again. It was below 40 saw. And we did lots of tefillah for those last 2 months. 2 months ago, it checked as being kosher. Now it checked as being not kosher. So once again, same story. I have a window. I know at the beginning of the window it was good. I know at the end of the window it's no good. What do I say during that period of time? So I'll tell you what I say. What I say is the Mishnah is very clear. The Mishnah could not be clearer. I know I read it, I just reread it, and that is, whatever I told them that mikvah during that window, no good. And it doesn't matter whether it's public or private, and even though we normally say, Safik Tumah Bereshus Yachid is, sorry, let's do that again. Even though I normally say, Safik Tumah Bereshus HaRabim is Tahor, not here. And Rashi explains, why not here? It's very simple. Because of Chazakah. You remember. You get, right? Because of Chazakah. Because anything I'm putting into that mikvah is starting off as being Tameh. Obviously. Why am I putting in the mikvah? Because it's Tameh. And now I'm putting it into a questionable mikvah. So we know, Omer Aches Kaso. The item that I put in was Tameh. It remains Tameh.
This applies to a woman in Nida?
Yeah, it applies to everything.
So if a woman went to
yes.
And then she went home, was with her husband, and then they find out that the mikvah didn't have enough? What do you do?
Right, problems. It's problems. Yeah, the mikvah is going to be checked. Okay, so you don't arrive at this problem. Okay, but your question is that right, Alan? Your understanding is excellent. That's exactly right. So Pshita, the Gemara says the chalukim out the tema ma'ila ma'freya meisleis kamash malan. The Gemara says obviously the rabbis argue. The Gemara says yeah, but what you could have said is the following. The word lamafreya could be interpreted as meisle, so admittedly, that's a stretch, but the Gemara says you could have thought that. The Gemara says, don't think that. Lamafreya means we go all the way back to the point of when I last knew it was good. The last bedika is the point in which we're going to take it all the way back to. This position, this Mishnah in Mikvaos, is arguing with Rav Elazar of our Mishnah over here. Good. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shosha Parakim, Tana Bikitam Shamotzei Achag Shal Tkufa. Okay, here we go. A little bit of season talk, a little bit of wind talk. I'm going to run through the Gemara over here, and I'm admitting on the front end. I don't have full understanding of what's going on over here, that which I understand. I'll explain that which I don't understand. I will just simply admit. I'll wave the white flag. I don't understand. Okay, so we're saying that we're describing critical times of the harvesting of grapes. So the first critical time of the harvesting of the grapes is going to be that eastern wind right after Sukkos. So you know that eastern wind blows right after Sukkos. I'm waving the white flag. Okay, I don't know what I'm talking about over here. Okay, back in the day, they really were, they were in touch with the land. And they understood all this. And I'm sure people, by the way, to this day understand this. Not me. Okay, I teach in high school. And I play golf. So I understand wind a little bit, but I don't understand the eastern wind that blows after Sukkos. And by the way, not only blowing after Sukkos, but Shel Tkufa. In other words, you have to also be in the right season as well. Everybody knows this part. I know everybody knows that over here, we know that the solar year and the lunar year are coordinated, but they're not running in synchronicity with one another. And that means to say that sometimes Sukkos could fall out in the summer, Sukkot could just fall out in the fall. Okay? And so over here, and I'm using summer and fall from a solar year seasonal standpoint. Okay, good. So over here, it has to be an eastern wind, but specific that where Sukkot fell out that year in the Tkufas Tishrei, what you and I would call fall. Okay. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer B'Shosha Parakim Orchin Es HaTvua. Okay, so over here, we're talking about the sale of wine and the sale of grain. Three times a year you're selling grain. Lifnei Azera, V'shas Azera, V'frosa Pesach. U'v'shosha prakim ochrim esayam, B'prosa Pesach, B'prosa Tzeres, B'prosa Chag, V'shemen me'atzeres ve'elach. Okay. Three critical time periods in which we're selling grain. Three critical time periods in which we're selling wine. And also at the end, a mention of oil. Again, you'll forgive me, please. I don't even think I'm going to need much forgiveness. I'm not going to go over here the three times. You and I are not agricultural people. It's not going to speak to us. But there are three critical periods. Lamai Hilchasa, the Gemara says, great. I'm so happy there are three critical periods. What significance does it have? So Amarava Vitemara Papa Lishutvim. So in terms of a partnership. Oh. Okay, in other words, when you have a partnership, so what do I need? Yeah. So I need consent. Right? Should we sell our property? If I'm only a shareholder in the property, I can't sell it unequivocally. I need a shareholders meeting. I need to call the other shareholders. Or let's say there's just one other shareholder. I need to call my partner. So these three time periods are the highest demand of grain and wine. And so since they're in the highest demands, so I, the shareholder, do not need to call a shareholders meeting. I can go ahead and sell.
The assumption is that
my partner is going to be livid with me if I decided not to sell during that period of time. So mikan ve'elech mai amarava kol yume pirkehu. So the Gemara says, are you allowed to sell? Let's say you didn't hit the peak, but you're somewhere within the peak. So the Gemara says kol yume pirkehu. As long as you are within this period of time, so you should be selling. Okay, you ready? We're going to do this quickly. And we're going to finish the perek. Vayikiz Ruach HaShemesh V'yaman Elokim Ruach Kadim Charishis. Sefer Yonah, we read it annually, by Mincha Yom Kippur. And over here, we're at the end of the Sefer. And what happens is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates a Ruach Kadim, an eastern wind, and it's Charishis. So that needs an explanation. My Charishis, Amar Yehuda B'Shah, Shem Nasheves Osa Talamim Talamim B'Yam. It is such a strong wind that basically it creates waves in the ocean. Now, it doesn't make sense because then it goes on to describe the heat and wind and heat, meaning if it's windy, it's not going to be so hot. Okay, so anupshat. The word charishis means the following. The eastern wind is so strong that when the eastern wind blows, all the other winds, north, west, south, all those other winds are quiet. The word charishis from the word cheresh. meaning it quiets, it silences all the other winds. V'hainu d'chsev asher begadecha chamim v'ashket eretz midarom. Amrav, the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Iyov, and the Gemara goes on to explain. Amrav techlifa barav chista, amrav chista emasai begadecha chamim. When are the clothing going to be warm? B'shar sheishkit eretz midarom. So that's when the wind is coming from the south. So all the other winds are silent towards the southern wind. Okay? Again, I'm saying the Gemara. I'm not giving a lot of explanation to the Gemara over here. But the point is that in that Pasuk in Yonah, when you see the Navi describing the Ruach Kadim Charishis, what does that mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu prepared a particularly strong eastern wind, silencing all the other winds. That's how you understand that Pasuk in Yonah. Rav Huna and Rav Chista were sitting, and who comes but none other than, I mispronounced his name. Let me now say correctly, Geneva. Okay, he comes up a number of times throughout Shas. He's one of the more interesting characters that you have. He's a Talmid Chacham, and he's unscrupulous. Okay? He's inconsistent. You know, all of us have certain inconsistencies, but he was blatantly inconsistent. So Amr Chalachavrei Nekam Emikam Debar Uryanhu. And now a debate between Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Should we stand for Geneva? Yes or no? And yes, it didn't escape me that his name, Geneva, Ganav, meaning, right? It's weird. Okay, let's just say it. It's weird. So anyway, so Nekam Emikam Debar Uryanhu. So one says that what we should do is we should stand for him because he's a Talmid Chacham. And Amr Lei Idach Mikame Paga Nekam. He's cantankerous. He starts fights. He's not an easy person. I don't think we should stand for him. And meanwhile, while they're having the debate, so Geneva comes. Did he overhear their debate? I'd love to know. So Amar Luhu b'mayaskitus, he says, okay, what are you talking about? So, I'm sure he's not going to be sharing. They're not going to be sharing with him. Well, we're debating whether we should stand for you or not stand for you. So Amr Lei Barucho. So they say, you know what we're talking about? We're talking about the winds. That's what we're talking about, obviously. Amr Luhu Achi Amr Rav Chanan Bar Rav Amr Rav Ar Baruchos Min Hashavas B'chol Yom. So you know, all four winds are blowing every day. Baruch Tzfonis Min Hashavas Im Kulan. Now that northern wind is blowing together with all four winds. Again, I don't pretend like I understand what's happening over here. The northern wind is blowing with the northern wind. Anyway, so il malei kein in olam eskayin afilo sha'achas. Now it's necessary. Okay, for reasons which I cannot articulate, it is absolutely necessary for that northern wind to be blowing with all the other winds. Somehow that northern wind is creating harmony. Viruch dromisi kashmi kulan. That southern wind is a monster. It's destructive. V'ilmalei ben neitz ma'amida. Now that southern wind is going to get tempered by a malach. That malach is called neitz. Okay? In other words, right? Okay. So what it does is it tempers that southern wind. And if it didn't, mecharevas kol alam kulam mipana, the southern wind would be destroying the whole world. Shenemar, ha mi binascha ya'aver neitz yifros kedafav l'seiman. So what it does is that it basically the pasuk in Iyov here is describing how this nates, the malach, is going ahead and creating mitigation for that southern wind. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Avi Yasev have a chalev azel. Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov the Yasev begoharka de dahava. Okay, let's try to get all the names straight. We have Rav and Rav Nachman Yitzchak. They were sitting. Along passes a different Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman Yaakov. And he was sitting on a golden chariot. So, ufaris alea sarbala dekarte. And, what they did is they covered him with some sort of, green canopy. So, and because of the green canopy, they didn't see who was sitting in the chariot. Rava azalagabe. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak azalagabe. Again, the Amoraim are debating whether or not they should visit the anonymous man in the chariot. Amar doma mein should debate resh galusin enu. And now, he looked like a person who was important, politically important. Rav Tzarech Lehu, Ana Lo Tzarechin Lehu. And now, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, look, Rava needs to be in with the political. Rav himself was a political figure. He was a figurehead, Rav himself. And so he needed to be sitting with other political heads. So therefore, Rava went to go visit him. On the other hand, I stay out of politics. Therefore, I have no need to visit him. So, kid the chaza, the Rav Nachman Yaakov Hava. But again, they didn't know who was in the chariot because it was covered by a canopy. Once the canopy was lifted and they saw that it was Rav Nachman Yaakov, Azulagabe. So now, he, even Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak went to go visit him. Galil Adare, Amar Shajanashiv. So so, and what he did is that he revealed his arm, meaning this Rav Nachman Yaakov. So, and because there happened to have been a wind that was blowing, and not just any wind, but an eastern wind, and it got so hot, that he had to basically roll up his sleeves. Amrav ha'achi amrav isha ma'pelas bo shmul amar afilu mar galu shabi yamar kevas bo rav yochan amar afilu shifra zer shememe isha ma'strechas bo. And the Gemara talks about the destructive nature of this eastern wind. It can, I'm going to go in order as just presented in the Gemara, it can create miscarriages. It can it can rot even pearls. It can even go ahead and deteriorate shechva zera inside of a woman. Okay, so this eastern wind is extraordinarily destructive. So far this morning, we have the southern winds being destructive, the eastern winds being destructive. We're almost done with today's daf. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Nachman, Yitzchak Ushosha Mikra Echadarshu, and all these positions are developed and derived from a pasuk in Hosea. This is in Treyasar. Ki hu ben achim yafri yavo kadim ruach Hashem imidbar oleh v'yevosh mikoro. So the Navi over here is describing the eastern wind, and what is it going to do? Yevosh mikoro. And yevosh mikoro is a mikoro shalisha, so number one, it could be understood as a uterus, and creating miscarriages. Number two, yevayacharev me mayano, ze shechva zera shebe me isha, the ma'ayan, literally a wellspring, but a reference over here to shechva zera, and hu yishvar otzer kol klechem dozu margol shebeyam, describing how it can also deteriorate precious pearls. Amarava. Adisarahu the Daikakra. So, and Rava's commentary over here is, these people are from Sura. People from Sura, they are experts in Tanakh. So over here, if you're hearing a drasha from anyone from Sura on a pasuk in Tanakh, this is a pasuk in Hosea. Okay, I can't speak for you, I can speak for me. I don't know Hosea. At one point in my life I learned it. That was a really long time ago. I haven't reviewed it in some time. Anyway, these people know Tanakh inside and out. So, Mikey, who bein achim yafri. So, as long as we're in this pasuk in Hosea, so the Gemara says, can we explain it? So, Amarava, filu, shufta, bekupina, damara. Even if, you have some sort of tool, some sort of farming instrument, even the handle, rafia. So, it's gonna get loosened. And Rav Yosef Amar, afilu, sikhta, bedafna. So, some sort of nail that's in the wall, rafia, it also will get loosened. And Ravacha bar Yaakov Amar Afilu Kanya Bekufta. Even if I have a basket and it's woven in well, rafia is going to get loosened as well. This eastern wind is so destructive, it's going to basically loosen everything. Hadron Alach, kol aget.
Wow.
Good, Mazel Tov. Wow. Okay. Fine. Baruch Hashem. Exactly what we planned on doing. Okay, Alan, just give me one more moment. Ugh, I bless your patience. So number one, what we did is that we finished that really interesting loan construction. Okay, starting on Daf Lamed, right? Lamed Amad Aleph. So we talked about a special type of loan. Well, what you're going to do as a lender is that you're going to borrow money to either the Kohen or to the Levi or to the Ani. And what are you going to do in terms of satisfaction of the debt? So you're going to just basically go ahead and start collecting from revenue streams. For the Kohen, that would be the Truma. And for the Levi, that would be the Meiser. And for the Ani, that would be the Meiser Ani. And you can go ahead and do so. And we spoke about so many details of that loan. Forgiveness of that loan, Shemitah to that loan, how to assess the produce. Oh my gosh. We went over, right, we quoted a Brisa, we quoted five different details regarding it. And that was almost the entirety of Daf Lamed. Right on Lamed Amud Beis. Then we quoted an obscure brisa, not obscure, but a vague brisa, describing how you have Maaser Rishon of a Levi. You want to buy the Maaser Rishon of the Levi. Do you have to be concerned about the fact that maybe the Levi took off the Trumas Maaser? That was a brisa. It matters whether you know the amount, you don't know the amount. Okay, and that took us to Lamed Aleph, today's daf. In today's daf, So what do? You created a reserve. In other words, you're going to be agriculturally harvesting grapes and grains. And what are you going to do? You're going to bank it. When I say bank it, what do I mean? Meaning that the 2% going to the Kohen, the 10% going to the Levi. And your Meister Sheni or your Meister Ani, so you have a reserve and you're going to keep good accounting, good numbers, so that their 2% now is going to be filled by that reserve. And when that reserve is filled with Truma, then you're going to give it to the Kohen. Great. Why is the Mishnah over here in Gittin? Because the question becomes, what happens if I lost it? If I lost it now, what do I assume? Do I go back to the last checkpoint where I know it was there? Or do I go to the time in which I lost it? And in the Mishnah talked about a 24-hour window where you're going to be okay. The 24-hour window is from the checkpoint, last checkpoint. The 24 hours was from the point of discovery. That was a machlokus amongst the Amoraim. And what we learned together is that our Mishnah over here is not agreeing with the Mishnah Mikvaos. Mishnah Mikvaos says is that when I have a mikvah, that's good. Now I know it's not good. And I have that window of time between the last checkpoint where it was good. And now, what do I say? Anything that tovel during the interim, no good. That's the Mishnah Mikvaos. Good. So our Mishnah over here is not in agreement with the Mishnah Mikvaos. The Gemara says, great. Great observation. Correct observation. And then for the remainder of today's daf, we spent the time talking about the winds, the devastating southern wind, the devastating eastern wind. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu manages and operates the world, balancing everything, making sure that the world works correctly.